I asked the preacher when I got here today, you know, I thought he was talking about me this morning. It's just God has a plan, and he puts things into place that sometimes we can't see. And I had this day planned out of who I wanted to sing, what I wanted, all that. But I've learned over the past month or so that my plans ain't nothing compared to what he's got. So I'm gonna try to be short, but I probably won't be. When you have an opportunity to brag on Jesus and what he's done in your life, it just takes however long it takes. So if you get tired of listening, whatever, y'all can go. But so, I mean, I've had a rough year. It's probably been about 6 months ago. I seen Heather was at the doctor at the same time, and I talked to her. Probably about a year ago, I started just distancing myself from everything. The ones of y'all that know me and know me well know that I can be kind of blunt and kind of rough, and I'm just 100% honest. And I told myself I was just going to back up and protect everybody from me, because I couldn't fix myself. I tried to be nice. I just couldn't. I only had one emotion. I was either numb or angry. I've been through a lot in my life. Melvin can attest my childhood wasn't that great. My parents loved me. They did the best they could do. I never went without anything, but it just wasn't that great. And when I was 17, I met my wife. We both worked at Winn-Dixie, and I've told her ever since I met her that she was the angel that God put in my life. If I wouldn't have met her, I would have been down a different path. Her family was Christians, and they got me into church. And first of all, when I met her, she told me she don't date football players, and I said, that's good, because I sit on the bench, so we ain't got no problem, you know. And then we started talking about getting married, and she said, I'm not going to marry a person that's not a Christian. And we started going to church. And my family, I mean, I used to go to church with my grandma when I was little, but I didn't understand it. I'd go give out Bibles or whatever. But I started going to church, and every Sunday I was crying and just emotional. And I thought to myself, man, I hate this place. Every time I come to church, they playing all these songs that I only heard at funerals. So I just thought, you know, I'm just being emotional because I don't like all these funerals it keeps reminding me of. And so finally it hit me one day that was the Holy Spirit calling me. I got saved in 98, but that didn't make me no better. I was just saved. Me and my wife's been married. We celebrated our 25th anniversary last year. You would think at that point that we had it made, you know, once you made it that far. But I was struggling, still struggling. I mean, first of all, I've raised two good kids, and me and her, and I'm proud of my kids. But the problem with my kids is they're like me and my wife. One of them acts like their mama, and one of them acts like me. It works out that way. So, you know, when me and Jacob gets in an argument, it's just like arguing with my wife. They act the same way. They have the same mannerisms. They do the same things. And then when me and Justin get mad at each other, we just go separate ways and say what we got to say, and 5 minutes later, we probably don't remember what we was arguing about. But so to get through all that, I mean, I've just had problems for a long time. And then I was in a wreck, got hurt my back. Y'all have all known I've had surgeries on my back. And then this year, I decided as a genius, both my knees was hurting. So I had two knee surgeries in 3 weeks. And then 3 weeks after that, I went back to work because I need my job. So I went back on a Thursday. I worked 2 days, had the weekend off. I was good. All weekend, I took it easy. Went back the next week, and by Thursday, I couldn't even hardly walk. So I decided, I'm taking Friday off. I'm going to have a long weekend. Going to relax, try to, you know, get some of the swelling to go down or whatever. And little did I know, on Thursday evening when I got home, me and Jacob had an argument. And just like the preacher said this morning, I flew off the handle. I mean, I'm a yeller. I mean, you're going to listen to me. I'm yelling louder, saying. I mean, as men, y'all know, we say stupid stuff when we get mad. And I said a bunch of stuff that I shouldn't have said. I tell you I'm a yeller, but I ain't never laid my hands on anybody. First of all, when you live in a house with Justin, you ain't going to lay your hands on nobody. I mean, if you got any sense. So never have I ever laid my hands on anybody. But we had a big argument. I yelled and screamed. And, you know, we've all heard of the fight or flight syndrome. Well, my deal is I get mad and I tell my wife I'm done. And what she's always heard when I say I'm done is she thinks I'm saying I'm done with you and we're not going to be married anymore. And what I really mean when I say I'm done is I can't handle anymore. I got to go. So I left, slammed the door, went out, and I rode around. I was going to get something to eat, and I couldn't figure out where to go. I rode to Buford, and I think I'm going to go get me some wings. So I just rode around. I finally ended up at Bojangles, got me some supper, went home, and I'm thinking everything's going to be fine. So I got home. Jacob and his girlfriend was gone. Crystal was packing a bag. Justin was here with her. And she said she was going to her mom and dad's. And I ain't going to lie to you now. I tell you, I say stupid stuff when I'm mad. So I told her, I said, if you leave, don't come back. I mean, that's what I said. So Justin took her to her mom and daddy's. And I'm thinking he's going to come back. You know, he's always been mine. He's always had my back. So he came home, and he packed the bag. So I'm there by myself. And I sat down in my chair probably for 2 hours. I didn't move. I just sat there and just thinking. And y'all going to think this is the silliest thing ever. But I'm sitting there by myself, and I look around. And normally when I'm sitting in my chair, the cat gets on my lap. So I'm looking around. Ain't nobody here. They even took the cat. So I'm by myself, totally by myself. And I don't really like cats that much, but it's what set me off. So I'm totally by myself. I'm realizing that everything's gone. And I'm sitting there thinking, everything I'm going to have to do, everything I'm going to have to sell, everything we're going to have to, just all the stress. So I decided, you know what, I'm just going to go to bed. So every night when I would go to bed, and I want y'all to remember this, okay? I normally, when everything was good on a normal night for me to be able to sleep, I had to take 2 muscle relaxers and 8 Benadryl every night. It's what you go through when you've been beat up like me. So I took my pills and I went to bed. And I had the worst nightmares. Just, I can't even remember. I just know they was bad. So I woke up thinking I ain't slept long. And I took another muscle relaxer and a couple more Benadryl. I texted Crystal, please come home. No response. So I'm sitting there contemplating, what am I going to do? I'm hurting. And when I tell you I'm hurting, I've been hurting for years. My physical pain in my knees and my back, I always think of Brother Jerry when he walked in. You know, he never had a complaint. I'm not like him. When you ask me what's wrong, I'm going to tell you I'm hurting. I mean, you can ask Preacher Trevor. I'm going to tell you the honest truth, whether you want to hear it or not. So my heartbreak turned into a pain that I've never felt in my life. When your emotions turn into physical pain. So I lay down on the couch, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what, if I could just go see Jesus, this would be over with. So this is what I did. I prayed and I said, Jesus, please don't let me do what I'm thinking. Please don't. And that's when I lost it. I went in the kitchen. I took a 90-day supply of muscle relaxers and a whole bottle of Benadryl. And I texted my wife and I said, come home and bring an ambulance. Because when I realized what I'd done, I come to myself, and I tried to go throw them pills up, and I couldn't. So that's when I texted her and told her, I said, come home and bring an ambulance. And that's the last thing I remember until this was Thursday night. So sometime Saturday morning, I wake up mentally. I could hear everything going on in the room around me. My brother was there. My wife was there. Bunch of doctors. I told everybody when they asked me what happened, I had a bad reaction to some medicine I took, which is not a lie, but that's just what I told everybody. So that's what happened. I woke up and I was on a ventilator. And for hours, I could hear the conversation. I heard everything that was said, but it would repeat itself every 30 minutes. I'm talking about, I heard somebody clap their hands, and the conversation was starting. It'd be the exact same thing over and over. I bet I heard my wife say 1,000 times, it's whatever he needs. I just want to do whatever he needs. I kept going, and I kept going. And then all of a sudden in the conversation, I heard a familiar voice, a man that's been in my life since my kids were five. And I heard Brother David walk in the room. I heard his voice, and it just kept repeating. The conversation got a little bit longer, a little bit longer. I heard him praying, but it kept cutting him off after about four words, five words, six words. Finally, I got all the way through his prayer. And when he said amen, my body came back to life. And my wife would tell you, you know, she's been a nurse for 25 years. She'll tell you it was the medicine wearing off, and I'm telling you it's not. When he uttered the words amen, my body come back to life. They had me tied down. I took my teeth and pulled that tube out of my throat. I don't know how. I remember the doctors yelling, stop. And all my wife said is, he ain't gonna stop. He don't stop. He's hard-headed. I pulled that tube out with my teeth. And the first thing I said, because I heard the conversation, I told him, I said, I'm not gonna lay here dying and listen to her lie, because I thought that I texted her the first time at 11 and maybe the second time at like 12:30 and she just didn't come. So after I was awake enough, they showed me my phone. I texted her the first time at 6:30 a.m. on Friday and the second time at 9:30 a.m. Now, I'm thinking that I woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't sleep. It's daylight outside. I couldn't see it. I was still in the dark. So I went through a couple of days of being, first of all, they don't pump your stomach anymore. So if you take a bunch of pills, you just get what you get, apparently, because they just kept me asleep and they had all these tubes and stuff in me. But when I woke up, I realized how wrong I was, first of all. But I did the thing I normally do. I blamed it on somebody else, right? So I went through that. And when I got settled out enough, they put me in ICU, which I don't know if all y'all know, but that's where my wife works. So all of her friends that she's been working with for 25 years was in my room, knew all of our business. I'm coming off that medicine. Every time somebody walked in the room, I'd ask them, are y'all, you know, this was me. Is she having y'all give me something to keep me feeling the way I'm feeling? And I remember this one guy kept coming in, and I tried to talk to him because, you know, he was a man. I figured men are usually be honest with you. And all he'd ever tell me is, I don't know, you're going to talk to your nurse. So finally this nurse walks in, and I asked her. And first thing, when I asked her if they were giving me any medicine, you know, to keep me calm or whatever, she closed the door, and she sat down in a chair. And she sat there and talked to me for 30 or 45 minutes and explained everything, you know, how everybody knows that that Crystal's pretty private, and, you know, that they know all of the business and everything. But So she made me feel good. She was like another angel that God sent my way. And come to find out, this is how God works now. This little girl that was my nurse don't even work in the ICU. She works in the quality department. But she picked up a day so Crystal could be off. And she's also Jacob's boss's wife. So I had a friend, somebody that I could be comfortable with. Well, so after I woke up and I got everything kind of back where I could think, my brother was there. And if y'all have heard me talk about my brother for years, I never expected my brother to be there. But I told my brother, I said, look, I said, I want you to call three people. I said, I need you to call Brooke, which y'all know used to go to church with me. I said, I want you to call Sarge, and I want you to call Scotty. I said, that's the only three people that I need to talk to right now. So they came in the room. Me and Sarge has got tight over the past couple of years, and I've known Scotty my whole life. But Brooke walked in the room. Scotty and Sarge was already there. And he didn't say a word. He didn't fuss at me. He just looked at me and he said, I told my wife when I heard what had happened that he's tired of hurting. He just wanted to go see Jesus. And that's the honest truth. He knew me. And when I tell you that I tried to kill myself, yeah, I did. But I just wanted to go see Jesus. I know when I get there that all this is going to be over with. And that's all I wanted. They came and took all my guns. They took, down to the last. I don't have a BB in the house at this point. And I said, why are y'all doing that? I said, I would never do that to my family and have y'all come in and see that, you know, something like that. So they start treating me for high blood pressure. They giving me medicine. Scotty's in there. You know, Scotty's had a stroke. They trying all this different medicine. Scotty's like the world's smartest person on blood pressure because he has to be, because if his gets weird, So he's in there giving me the play-by-play. This, you know, y'all know Scotty. This ain't good. And he starts telling that nurse, you know, hey, you ain't doing this right, and you ain't doing this number supposed to be this, and this number supposed to be that. So she goes and gets a different medicine. And they in there, and she puts that medicine in my veins, and all of a sudden, I'm dying again. I'm in a full-body seizure. Scotty's throwing a fit. I mean, he's letting them have it, you know. My brother was actually in the room at that time, and he left. He walked out of the room. And it wasn't 10 minutes later, God brought my whole family back. My wife walked back in that room, and we was all good from there. I mean, it was the hand of God that just changed everything like nothing ever happened. So at that point, we good. She's like, we're going to do whatever it takes. You can come home. Well, I found out why I was there. That I had more friends than I ever thought. And people shows up that, not fussing, not telling me how stupid I was, just showed up. And I told you the three I called, I knew they were going to be there. Preacher Trevor showed up on a Sunday morning. He was at church, and he left to come see me. He didn't have a clue. He just knew I was in the hospital, and that was big. And he's been big in my life for a long time. David, Tommy, and Cindy come to see me. Preacher Tim come to see me. He didn't say a word. He just prayed. Just prayed. Came twice and just prayed, and it worked. Even Greg came to see me. Greg Stacks came to see me. If y'all know Greg don't go to the hospitals. Not even when he needs to. So everything's good. I'm getting better. Well, Crystal has to go back to work. She can't go to work if I'm there. So they moved me to the sixth floor. And the doctor started asking all these questions about her home life, you know, this and that and the other. Well, they made me see a psychiatrist over the little TV screen, iPad. And he asked me about what I did. And, you know, I mean, I ain't lying, but I told him I took a handful of pills. I'm trying to go home, right? So he kept asking me how many. I said, man, I don't know. I took a handful. I'm wanting to go home. He said, I'm going to call your wife. I said, oh, God. So he called my wife, and she told him exactly what I did. And at that point, he told me that I had to spend a week in a mental facility. And I'm scared to death. Scared to death. Not, I mean, but I got to do what I got to do. So luckily, I got some friends that's pretty smart about what goes on in them places. And I left with the clothes I needed. I left with the phone numbers I needed, all except for Trevor's because his had changed. But I don't know if y'all know, but when you get transferred from the hospital to a mental facility, it's in the back of a police car. 2.5 hours to Conway in the back of a police car. So the nurse comes in, says the guy's here to pick you up. And I told her, I said, look, ask him if he can wait around long enough for me to take a shower. And she said, she said he would. And he said, I told him that you was a good guy and that, you know, you can wear your regular clothes. And he didn't make me wear no handcuffs or nothing. So we get in the car, and for 2.5 hours, we talked about God. It's another time that God just showed up. This police officer, sheriff's deputy, whatever, he was a believer. We rode to Conway with the windows down. We talked about Jesus the whole time. Not once did he ever judge me or tell me how stupid I was. And then we get to Conway in this facility, and they so busy. I mean, any of y'all that's got anything to do with the medical world, they're so overwhelmed. And I didn't realize, like, when my wife would tell me how bad her day was at work, I didn't have a clue until I sat there for 3 days and watched it. It's unreal. So when I got there, they were so busy, they had to put me in, they got different wings for different ages, different problems. So when I got there, I got put in the drug and alcohol rehabilitation wing, and that's where they did my intake or whatever you call it, where they asked me all these questions and they gave me a physical. And then I had to sit in this room with a bunch of what I would normally before this call crackheads and alcoholics for 4 hours. And that was bad until they come got me and they put me in the mental health wing. I walked in that room. I didn't say a word. I was scared to death. When I tell y'all the mental health wing, I'm talking about people walking around talking to people that ain't there. I'm talking about people that's just sitting there talking to you 1 minute, and the next minute they're running up and down the hall screaming, running. And this one little black kid walked up to me as I'm sitting there trying to ignore everybody. And he just started talking to me. Just the sweetest kid that you ever meet. And that kind of picked my spirits up a little bit. And you couldn't talk, you couldn't have a cell phone. They didn't have no TVs. You couldn't have clothes with any kind of strings in them. Matter of fact, the first night I wore, the men are going to understand this, I wore paper, scrubs, and they give you a pair of government issue tighty whities and a pair of grip socks. And that's what I was in. Sitting around, that's all you had. My knees was killing me, didn't have no shoes. And so I called Crystal. They let you use the phone at like 8 o'clock. So she got off work. And I called her, and she's like, how is it? I said, it's a freaking dump. This is the worst place. I said, if this was a hotel, we'd go somewhere else. It was that bad. It was just nasty, understaffed, crazy people everywhere. I mean, so I go to the room. They put you three in a room. So I walk into the room they assigned me to. I'm the bed in the middle. The first guy is about a 6'3" black guy with dreads and, you know, pretty scary. My bed's in the middle. The third guy's about a 65-year-old black guy over by the window. He's already asleep. You know, I walked in there. It was hot. Anybody that ever goes out of town to go to a hotel, you know the first thing you do when you get to the hotel is turn the air conditioning down as low as it'll go. So I walked over to the air conditioning. It was on 77 degrees. And I'm thinking it's going to be a long week. So when I talked to Crystal, she asked me, you know, how it was. And I told her all that. And, you know, she didn't care nothing about it being a crappy place or whatever. She told me the next day, she said, the only thing I kept thinking was 77 degrees. And he's trying to sleep. Well, let me tell you what happened. I laid down to go to bed, took a shower. You know, they give you this little box full of stuff. You get body wash and soap and a toothbrush about that big. But I took my shower and got ready to lay down, and I'm thinking, Lord, I ain't going to make it through the night. There ain't no way I'm going to be able to sleep. Well, by the time I got aggravated, that big old 6'3" black guy at the door, he jumps up and says, it's hot in here. And I don't know if you ever worked with any black folks. Most of them don't get hot. You know, they like it warm. So he jumps up. He's like, it's too hot in here. And I looked at him. I said, I love you. I said, we need to turn that air conditioning down. But what about this guy over here? He said, he's just going to have to deal with it. So it's two against one. You know, I'm good. He turns the air conditioning down on 60. We get some sleep. I'm going to tell you how this place works, so how they treat people with mental health conditions. I went to the nurse the next day and I explained the situation because, you know, I don't need to be here. I ain't crazy. You know, I just did something stupid is what I'm thinking. So I go in there and I ask him, I say, hey, you know, it's going to be cold in here. Can he get an extra blanket? Not without a doctor's order for a blanket. It's about as dumb as Trevor brought me when you was there and I told you I needed some cough drops. Trevor brought me two bags of cough drops. I had them for about 30 minutes. The director of that floor came in there and said, you can't have them. I said, why? He's like, you can make them into a shiv. And I told him, I said, I'm talented, but I ain't that good. But you can't have nothing like that. The boys brought me a Coke from the cafeteria. He took that. But I tell you how much Josh Sellers loves me now. He showed up with a bag full of cheeseburgers. That's how, I mean, when he showed up, he brought food. He knew what I was wanting. But anyway, so I got to that facility. You couldn't get the guy a blanket. I mean, people with mental health problems get treated so bad. I mean, that's what I found down there. So the whole next day, I mean, I didn't see the doctor till like the second day. So I go in there to the psychiatrist and we talking, and he's asking me these questions. And I said, well, you ever seen the movie Shawshank Redemption? I'm the fat kid talking about, I ain't supposed to be here. You know what I mean? I told him, I said, I don't feel like being here is going to help me none. And he's like, what you mean? I said, there's all these people running around, yelling and screaming. I said, this ain't going to help you. And he looked me dead in the eyes, and he said, that's part of the treatment. Well, at this point, you know, God's done saved my life. I'm fixed. You know what I mean? I told them when I got there, I said, look, y'all let me go home. I'll never be back here. I mean, you won't never have to worry about this again. Well, I talked to him that first day. Ain't nobody doing nothing else. You're supposed to have, like, these group sessions and stuff, and nobody's doing anything. We're just sitting around. Like, I'm sitting around with a bunch of crazy people. Well, there was two other guys in there that was reading their Bible. And that, I know you go to a hotel and you see a Gideon's Bible and everybody just expect it. But when I walked in my room and I found that Bible that was laying beside my bed and I got it and I opened it up to Romans. And I just sit down and start reading. And then people start asking questions. Well, luckily, I've been in church since 1998, and I've been under some pretty good preaching for the last 10 years. I was able to answer their questions. God used me in a way that I never would have expected. I mean, it was just firing left and right. Didn't have a phone to look it up, because, you know, normally you ask me a question, I'm just going to Google it. And so, I had to use the Bible. I spent a whole week with nothing, but we had a Bible. We had 3 meals a day, and we had a deck of cards. So I'd wake up in the morning and read my Bible till everybody else woke up, and read through the whole book of Romans. Started in Corinthians, where it got to love. And then I was reminded. About why I was there. And it wasn't. Now, did I get some help while I was there and learn some stuff? Yeah, and I'm going to tell you about it in a minute. But I got to Corinthians. Like I said, I read the whole book of Romans, and I got to the 13th chapter of Corinthians. It says, love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things. Love never ends. And when I read that, I'm done. I'm good to go home. Because I wasn't doing none of that stuff. I mean, I was not patient, not kind. I love to brag. I'm rude. I mean, it's everything I was doing. Irritable. Resentful. So, I mean, me and Dallas has talked for years, and I've always told him, kind of in a joking way, but it was the truth, you know. One thing we always say is our biggest enemy is right here between these two temples. So after being there a few days, the doctor finally brought me in the room, and he told me, and this is the whole reason why I'm doing this, because nobody that's ever been through this wants to talk about it, but I do, because I don't want anybody else to have to go through what I went through. Y'all should not have to repeat the same stupidness that I did. But I've been diagnosed as being bipolar. That's what's wrong with me. And I couldn't fix it, because I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be aggravated. I don't want to be rude, but I just couldn't help it. So the way they figure out what you are, what's wrong with you, is they got these lists, and if you fit like 5 things on the list, then you got it. That's just, I mean, it's that simple. You got what, they don't know what level or whatever, but so symptoms of being bipolar, and once again, they just writing out like a whole book of my life. So the first symptom is trouble sleeping. I thought it was pain. Then the second one I ain't ever had, tremendous energy. That ain't me, so I had to mark that one off the list. I didn't get that one. But it feels like you can achieve anything. That's just confidence that you can do anything. Looking or acting weird, agitated, or jumpy. Most men probably do this, but when I go into a restaurant, I sit with my face. You ain't going to get me to sit with my back to the door, because I got to know what's going on. And I'm going to sit at the far back of the room where I can see everybody, because I'm jumpy. Something crazy happens, I need to see it, because then it starts getting real. Belief of greater importance than others. Got me again. Anger and aggression when behavior or views are challenged. Got me again. Frequently involving risky behavior, unsafe driving, or overspending. Now you can, Melissa will vouch for this. I got the unsafe driving. They don't like to ride with me too much. If I wish Sarge was here, he could tell you about the last time we went to the race. We was going to Darlington, you had them ditches, and we sitting in traffic, and traffic's backed up, and there's a whole field over here. And I'm in a four-wheel drive truck, so I just reach up, mash the button, and I go through the ditch. It's a big old ditch now, but I went through the ditch. Then you get hallucinations and delusions causing them to feel or hear things not in reality. Now, I don't hear things, but feelings that you can't control. And this is something big. You can't help what hurts your feelings. And you can't help the way you feel. You can be wrong and get your feelings hurt. And you can't win the argument that you're wrong, but your feelings are still hurt. And the biggest one is inability to realize inappropriate behavior or the consequences of it. So like I say, you only got to meet five of them to be. So this is, they put me on some medicine. I take a pill in the morning and a pill at night. It's all from moods. And it's, I mean, it changed my life. So the reason I'm standing up here today is because I realized when I was there is no help for people with mental health problems. Because as a society, we just call them crazy and move on. Something's wrong with them people. We don't want to be around them. But I ain't going to ask people to do it, but I guarantee you at least 40% of the people in this room is on some kind of pill for mental health. Guaranteed. My wife, when my boys called all my friends and my wife called all the wives of everybody, you know, we kind of split. She talked to them. Every woman that she talked to, down to the very last one, their husbands had been through something like this. And my question is, why hadn't they told anybody? Why do we just keep hiding it? And it's pride. It's the same reason that I didn't get any help before I did something stupid. It's pride. Do y'all know the amount of people that I could have called that would have been at my house? Sarge lives 3 miles away from me, and I couldn't make the call because of pride. So if you see somebody, well, first of all this made me look at life a lot different, because I'm locked up with these people, and I know it's getting to be close, but I'm about done. But I'm locked up with these people. I can't get out if I wanted to. But God moved so much while I was there that it was unreal. So the big black guy that was in my room, that this guy, he's got problems, don't get me wrong, but he's a Scoopy Miller made over. He just aggravated people. He would act crazy just to aggravate the nurses. And he wasn't being crazy. He was just acting crazy just so he could aggravate them. And then, but he was paranoid schizophrenic. This guy, and he explained it to me, because I talked to all these people. He can go through life and get his life to be perfect and have a job, be in a relationship, and everything will go along good for about 6 months. And all of a sudden he starts thinking, everything's good, so what's wrong? Can I trust these people? And he just goes right back. It's a cycle. A guy named Gerard from St. Andrews. I mean, this guy, nicest guy, smart. You just be sitting there talking to him, and I ain't gonna use the words he used, but the older fellow that was in my room, they was eating lunch at the same table one day, and he just stands up and calls him a skinny blank, blank, blank. And, you know, we kind of laughed about it. And he's like, and the guy was like, "You talking to me?" He's like, "No, I ain't talking to you." He did the same thing to me. We sitting there playing cards one night, and he just jumps up and just can't help it. You know, I'm thinking he's talking about me. But this guy Allen was an Army vet. Let me tell you, he lived in North Carolina, and he was in a children's home right next to the Army base. Children's home for children with mental problems. The day he turned 18, they kicked him out. He walked right out of the parking lot of the mental facility, right into the Army base, and they sent him to war with mental problems, because that's what they did in the 70s and 80s. Few guys was in there with good families and just anxiety, depression. We had one guy down there that ran a restaurant. He got to a point he couldn't handle it. But he's the one that called me. He got out a day after I did. I gave him my number. He called me. He's like, "You ain't going to believe this." And the second thing he said is, "God's been so good to me since I got out." So this guy gets out. He drove himself to the hospital because he needed help. But once you go to the hospital and tell them that you're having problems, they can't just do whatever. It's the police and you going. So he couldn't get to his truck. Cell phone bill hadn't been paid. Truck was in the impound. He couldn't get to his job because he didn't have his truck. He had a check waiting on him. He couldn't get his cell phone because he couldn't get to his check. So when he finally got to where he could use the phone, God had already paid his cell phone bill. They turned his cell phone back on. He got an Uber to go get his check. They paid him when he got his check. He went to get his truck. Somebody had already paid his insurance. Somebody had already paid to get it. All God. Just like I told you tonight, I had somebody else that I'd already asked to sing. But I think God's way turned out way better than what I would have planned. So the title, and I give it to Riley, and I don't know, the title of my testimony, because I've never had a testimony. I've never been tested. And the one time I did get tested, I failed. But the title of my testimony, and I told Trevor and I told Preacher Tim, is, "He didn't stop me, but he wouldn't let me." And I prayed to God to ask me, I mean, to keep me from doing what I was thinking about doing. And if you want to look at it and say he didn't answer my prayer, then I'm going to tell you you're wrong. And his answer, you know, I've heard it my whole life. You either get yes, no, or wait. And that wasn't God's answer to me this time. His answer was, "No, you go ahead and do it your way. And I'm going to show you what your way looks like, and then I'm going to show you what I can do." And that's what he did for me. So I had a guy down there tell me, he's like, "You think there's rock bottom as far as you can go." He said, "But there's a basement to rock bottom." And he can reach down and do way more than you would ever imagine. And every time I pray now, I thank God for showing me his power. Because before I believed in God, and I believe God did miracles and can do miracles, but I never felt one. I've always seen them for somebody else. But when you laying in that bed and you realize what you've done to yourself and you deserve to die, and listen, I woke up, all my labs were good, my kidneys are good, my liver is good. I mean, my liver enzymes are a little high, but probably because I do a lot of fat foods and fried foods and whatever, and I always take a bunch of medicine. But I don't have any health problems from this. Nothing. So you'll never be able to tell me that God ain't got the power that we can never understand. If whatever you think he can't do, just test him. He can show you. Now, I ain't telling you to go out and try what I tried, because he might have just done that for me. He might not do that for you, so don't try that. But he proved to me that no matter how stupid my ways are, he can fix it. So, but I will tell you this, and everybody's told me, yeah, I should have called somebody. I get it. But if you have a mental problems, just like I told y'all in Sunday school this morning, people have a mental problems. You don't think they want them fixed. You think they want to be that way. So if this is the biggest thing that I brought out of this, when you see somebody doing something crazy, don't judge them. There ain't no such thing to me anymore as just some crackhead walking down the street. It's somebody that's got problems that they can't fix. You can't, if you don't think if they could snap their fingers and not be a crackhead, they wouldn't. You don't think, I mean, so, and I'm going to brag on one more person before I'm done. Every woman that my wife talked to when all this happened, everyone, you know how y'all do. You call your girlfriends and you've been on that. Every one of them told her to leave me. Done. You've been at this too long. But there was one. There was one that said, keep fighting. Keep fighting. And that was Melissa Payton. And I owe my family to her. So I want to, from what you did, this sermon you did this morning, I want to apologize. I know I probably hadn't heard everybody's feelings in here, but I know I've heard a bunch, and I've said a lot over the years and done a lot. But I'm telling you, I'm way better now. And I realized how blessed I am, and I don't have problems. I thought I had problems, but until you get locked up with people that's got real problems, you don't even know what problems look like. So I thank y'all, the ones that prayed for me, the ones that come see me, the ones that ain't never turned their back on me. And I got to brag on David, and he ain't here, and I wish he was so I could tell him face to face. He's never give up on me. He's never, ever. And we've been together for a long time, and we've both done some stupid stuff. But he's never, ever told me, I'm done with you. He's always grace and mercy. And I want to thank God for his grace and his mercy, because without that, I would not be here today. Amen. I love you. Let's go eat supper.